Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
Experience the difference. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with your host, Reverend Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from a still rather balmy day in Fort Worth, Texas, though it is dropped down into the 80s now. So to that we say thank you, God. Today I begin a four-part series, an exciting four-part series, I hope, on the theme of new thoughts and unitive teaching today. Where are we? Over the coming month, I have such luminaries as Linda Martella-Witsit, the author and now head of Unity's prayer ministry, Silent Unity. Also, Dr. Ken Gordon joins me. He's the spiritual leader for the Centers of Spiritual Living. And then we also have best-selling author, historian, publishing executive, man about town, Mitch Horowitz, whose books One Simple Idea and now his new book, The Miracle Club, are focused on new thought spirituality. But today, though, it's a great pleasure to welcome Lola to the show. Lola is the spiritual leader of the vibrant and progressive Bodhi Center. And she's one of the true originals, I think, in the field of unitive understanding. More important even than that, she's been able to make the connection between the wonderful principles of New Thought teaching with the joy-filled and life-changing practical application of the same. And I think this is a huge task sometimes, because we can have a wonderful idea, but how do we make it practical? And this is one of the things that New Thought is always working with, as any spirituality, I guess. So it's a joy to welcome Lola to the show. Welcome.
Hey, thank you, Paul. I'm super excited to be here.
Well, we're glad you're here. And before we get into our discussion, tell us a little bit about the Bodhi Center for those of us who don't really know what it is. And also included in that, would you share your the core understanding that charges and inspires your ministry?
Yes. So Bodhi Spiritual Center has been in existence for 15 years. We are a center for spiritual living that was really birthed out of the Agape International Spiritual Center. We were founded by a guy named Mark Anthony Lord, who's currently the senior minister at Unity of Naples. He trained with Michael Beckwith. I was introduced to Unity of Chicago in 1992, perhaps, and started attending there in, I think, 1997. And really, the guy who I would say was my first minister, so to speak, was Ed Townley. And just had a huge impact on my life in ways that I don't even think he really knew at the time. I was raised, I would say, I was raised Catholic. My maternal grandparents were devout social justice Catholics, but they were also deep, roomy meditators that, you know, lived on sacred land in Cerritos, New Mexico, and studied in person with Thich Nhat Hanh. So, you know, I sort of had this really interesting understanding of my spiritual nature as a pretty young kid, and became a mom when I was 18, and life started to feel increasingly more challenging, and I was really looking for an answer to understand what seemed to be the complex nature of my life. I just had this sort of knowing in me that it didn't have to be this way, and yet I couldn't figure out how to shift my experience of the world around me. And then I think it was 1999, this thing came out called Pioneers for the Possible, New Thought Broadcasting. And it was this big idea whereby Marianne Williamson and Wayne Dyer and Michael Beckwith and Bob Proctor and Mary Manna Morrissey were launching, drumroll please, an internet radio station. And they came to Unity of Chicago to promote it, and I happened to win like a 3-year subscription into it. And that was really the first time I was exposed to Michael Beckwith and Ricky Byers Beckwith. And I heard Michael Beckwith open his mouth, and I was like, I don't know who this guy is or what he's talking about, but I'm here for this. And that was sort of the beginning of where I am today.
Very cool. You know, you mentioned Centers for Spiritual Living, you know, and that's something very interesting, is it? Because they used to be called Science of Mind or Religious Science, right? And then there was this reimagining or rebranding, I guess, into the Centers for Spiritual Living. And something seems to have happened since then. You know, the vibrancy level's gone up, you know. The whole shift away from something that seemed a little staid, maybe, you know, religious science and that mm-hmm. old way of thinking to this idea, again, which I've referenced earlier, how to put it into practice, you know, Centers for Spiritual Living, as opposed to analyzing it in our heads. And to me, this mm-hmm. is, you know, having been a minister for 30 years, I think this is one of the biggest hurdles that I was struggling with in my ministry. And that is, you know, it's one thing to introduce people to new ideas and they willingly take them on. But then the application of them, you know, we still stay stuck in our old dualism sometimes. We're unwilling mm-hmm. to actually bring them down into a life-changing way of approach. And some ministers seem, like you said, you referenced Beckwith, and there's some others who seem to inspire that, you know, enable mm-hmm. us to get into a place where, yeah, I'm going to go, I'm living this now. I'm not going to just talk about it. But it's tough, isn't it? Tell us about that and your experience there about how to do that.
Well, it is so curious that we should be in this conversation right now. Our series title for the month of October at Bodhi is Open at the Top. And, of course, it's inspired by the work of Ernest Holmes, who, you know, really, in my interpretation, encouraged humanity to release its dogmatic interpretation of sacred texts, and as in the United Church of Christ tradition would say, God is still speaking. And I think Ernest Holmes' interpretation of that was be open at the top. And what is, you know, there is this this condition in the human experience to resist change. And I'm going to whisper this, Paul, but even in the New Thought movement, that's...
I know, shock horror, yeah.
And so, you know, it's interesting. Like, I would say Bodhi really is a very progressive community that's always sort of encouraging the expansion of who we're here to be. And even in a community that's relatively young and very nimble, that human tendency to be fearful of expansion or be fearful of change can show up. So, you know, we're in the midst of you know, shifts and changes ourselves. You know, we've been very forthcoming in addressing social issues of the day. We've been very forthcoming in speaking to the radical politic of the day, and discerning the distinction between partisanship and politics. You know, it's easy to think those two things are synonymous. But, you know, that you know, for just to provide an example, it is the privileged perspective that can hear our exploration of racism in America as a political topic. And, you know, we could argue that a couple ways. I could say, yes, it's deeply political, and I would encourage us not to be afraid of being political. That's very different than being partisan. One could argue that Jesus was profoundly political, as an example. But I could also argue the point that to address the race consciousness of racism in America is the most fundamental concern facing culture and society at this time and place. And if one is committed and interested in oneness, I don't know how you don't explore the topic of racism. I just provide that as an example. I think that's something that Bodhi has done really well. It's certainly an area of interest for me. I can sit and navel gaze all day long. I love philosophizing, but at the end of the day, if the application of the teachings don't make a difference in the individual's life and in the collective experience, it's nothing more than recreation. And I am less interested in recreation and more interested in transformation.
Right, absolutely. And we could say that we're definitely in a transformative phase of our society right now, because, you know, when things break down, when things seem to be so divided, it's not necessarily a bad thing, is it? It's a chance for a rebirth, right? You know, if you look at the Hindu way of approach, you know, things have to dissolve or be destroyed in order for something new to come up. It's the phoenix idea, out of the ashes or whatever. And it's not very comfortable when it's happening, right? It's like, just to go on Facebook is so, I don't know, it's disheartening, because you see each side thinks they're totally right, you know, and it's hard to get your head around it, because, you know, how can such diverse viewpoints, you know, be together there? It's crazy making. My feeling about white privilege and racism is that, you know, white privilege is dying, right? But the rear guard action of trying to hold on to it is very strong. So, you know, its day is over, but, you know, nobody wants to admit it yet, right? And again, not to get political, just to quote a statement, you know, Orrin Hatch last week was asked what she thought about the professor who gave testimony at the Kavanaugh case, and he said, I thought she was very attractive. And then they asked him what he meant by that. I said, well, he said, well, I mean pleasing. But, you know, none of those epithets are appropriate, right, in terms of what, the substance of what she was saying. And, I mean, obviously he was referring to the way she presented, you know, the surface of her. And it just amazes me that, you know, a leader like that with such a senior authority in our congressional system is saying things like that. It just blows my mind. It's just an example, not to be partisan, but just that somebody would say that. It has no relevance to the important case at hand, I think, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. But I think when you're provided with so much authority without the expectation of true curiosity around the experience of other human beings on the planet, you become deeply unconscious and you're increasingly less aware of that. You know, when you extract yourself more and more from humanity, you live in a bubble. And you know, I think that we're all charged right now with walking on the planet with greater curiosity. You know, may we delay our assumptions. May we put pause on our judgments. One of my great practices comes out of a body of work from one of my mentors, a guy named Jim Dethmer, the founder of the Conscious Leadership Group. He wrote a book called The 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership. And commitment number 10 is considering that the opposite of your story may be as true or truer than your story. And, you know, I think one of the things that is occurring right now is this profoundly triggered and reactive state. And, you know, groups that have historically not been called to task, identities that have historically not been called to task, perhaps Orrin Hatch being one of them, is being called to task newly in a way that I think is very exciting. And the tendency when we begin to be called on our stuff is to get defensive. And for me, it's like when I start to get defensive, Lola, pay greater attention. Your inclination for defense is an indication that there's something here to be unraveled. And I think we're all being called into that today.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And we have, you know, if we see it in another too, you know, as we always say, right, it's if you spot it, you got it kind of thing. So, you know, rather than label the other person as a problem, you have to say, well, what is it in me that's similar to that? And we all have blind spots. But I love this idea, open at the top, you know, because, again, in the Hindu tradition, you know, the thousand petal lotus is at the top of the head. It's our connection to the infinite, right? And nobody could limit the thousand petal lotus. You know, it's infinite in its possibility. And so we must always stay open to that divine connection, because if you think you've got God in your pocket, then it's not much of a God, right? The God must be that, or the divine, or whatever name you want to put it to it, is you know, infinite. And we must stay curious. One of my favorite quotes is, you know, old men must be explorers. T.S. Eliot said that. But young men, young women, everyone needs to stay in an exploratory point of view, right? Stay curious, be teachable, not have your mind made up.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. You know, I recently used the word secular, I might say, three times at Bodhi. And the invitation was to consider that it would be of great service to take some of our teachings and program them in such a way that even for those who don't identify as explicitly spiritual, they have access to the really powerful body of work that we're always exploring. And it was interesting. There were a handful of people that had a strong reaction to my use of the word secular. And I thought, that is so curious. We are a fundamental teaching that suggests God is all that is. There's no place where God is not. There is nothing separate and apart from this infinite universe of which we are intrinsically connected to, except apparently the secular world. I thought that was so hysterical. Like, this fear that creeps in that I'm going to lose my thing. And, you know, the cool thing about a place like Bodhi is that we have people on a really vast spectrum of inquiry around this thing called life. You know, I had a woman come up to me a few weeks ago, and she said, I just can't tell you how appreciative I am for finding this place. I had no idea a place like this existed. And I said, well, how did you find us? You know, like, were you raised in a particular tradition? And she said, I am an atheist, and I have just held the idea that there must be a place for me that I can still experience vibrant, dynamic, and alive community. And I found that here. And I thought to myself, that is so powerful, to create a space where people can feel what they experience as a profound aliveness through the use of the word God in that context. And it's not at the exclusion of someone who also feels a sense of great aliveness and identifies as atheist. Like, that's a really beautiful thing.
I love that word aliveness, you know, because I have the same feeling. I grew up in Britain, which is a fairly, quote, secular society. And a lot of my friends are not what you'd call religious in any way, and yet I find them very spiritual. But if you try and talk about God with them, they're going to shut down in some way, you know. But if you just talk about life and what it means to be alive and full of aliveness, then we're talking the same spirituality. It's just you know, the words are not helpful. The words shut us down sometimes, you know, God, the divine, whatever. Right. And so that gets in the way. So, you know, I'd rather a fully alive secularist than a a person who's, you know, made up their minds about that Jesus has to be a certain way and you have to accept Jesus a certain way, etc. That's to
right.
me, is not life enhancing. It's deadening, right? Because you're forcing a mind system on somebody else, and that's probably the worst thing you could ever do to somebody, I think.
Well, that's exactly right. I said, you know, when we start to resist a word like secular, we are very close to being the most dogmatic people that we're afraid of. And I find that fascinating.
Right. Well, and that sort of ties in with what we were talking about earlier, you know, that sometimes, you know, we talk about being so free in New Thought, and yet we, you know, we're stuck in our certain labels, aren't we, about what spirituality is, and though, although we would never say we were fundamentalist, in some ways, you know, there's a tendency to be that, you know. For instance, we don't like to look at the dark side of things, right, the shadow, because everything mm-hmm. must be, you know, positive, you know, throw an affirmation on it, you know, don't be negative, cancel, mm-hmm. and all that. But it's important, isn't it, to look at the shadow side of ourselves. You know, I know a lot of New Thought people have a real hard time with Jesus getting angry in the temple. And, you know, the usual interpretation is he was just doing a demonstration. He wasn't really angry. You know, Jesus would never be angry. And, because, you know, we don't want to allow that emotion as part of our, you know, our pantheon of feelings. But really, it's a human emotion, right? I'm
Absolutely.
Certain Jesus felt all emotions at one time or another in his ministry.
Yes, absolutely. Again, resting on the supposition that everything is God or everything is infinite in its nature, how could anger be something outside of that? Like, to your point, like, it is a... Now, we could for sure, you know, suggests that there's conscious anger and unconscious anger, clean anger and unclean anger. But, you know, it's just there are ways to be responsible while still honoring what is occurring in oneself, you know? I mean,
absolutely.
And the thing is, I mean, the statistics don't lie. That's the bottom line. Religion in America is not growing at a rapid and alarming rate. Like, I don't mean to make light of it, but it's like, you know, let's just say these are some dated statistics. 36% of Americans now say they attend religious services at least once a week. That's down from 39% in 2007. This decline is accompanied by a rise in the share of United States adults who say they seldom or never attend religious services. Now, 8% of U.S. adults who describe themselves religiously as atheist, agnostic, or nothing in particular belong to a house of worship. And, this is interesting, 4 in 10 Americans say they meditate at least once a week. So there's something for traditional spiritual communities, and I include the New Thought movement in that, although we'd like to consider ourselves an alternative spirituality, and yet I don't think we've always scrutinized some of our practices or our ways of being, there's something for us to pay attention to. You know, we have recently rolled out something called the Conscious Leadership Program at Bodhi, and it's sort of a reworking, a rebranding, if you will, more innovative application of what we've traditionally talked about as practitioner training. We've typically had about 9 to 10 people engage in our practitioner training. Now, I know that there are certainly communities that are different from us in that. Our Conscious Leadership Program has a waiting list for this fall.
Wow.
The teachings are no different. It's just a more innovative, applicable, resonant interpretation of the principles so that they are accessible to today's human being. That to me is like,
and you know, it's a constant go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say that to me is very exciting.
Yeah, because it's a constant reimagining, isn't it? Again, you know, it's not staying stuck in what may have worked beautifully, you know, 20 years ago doesn't necessarily work well today. You know, one of the things that happened for our community is we had a huge split around year 20 of my ministry, and I'd originally grown the ministry from quite small to, you know, maybe less than 40 to about 500 people on Sunday, and then we sort of went to half of that after the split. And I noticed how different it was trying to rebuild, you know, in the 2000s than it was back in the, you know, the 90s. It's a totally different ball game. I mean, like you were referencing, people are looking at spirituality totally differently. And for me to apply the same techniques or motivations that might have worked back in the 90s, you know, it's not going to work today. So I never did find really what does work, and that's it. And I think that's true across the board, that many churches, you know, are foundering, aren't they? And so I know many Unity churches are closing or whatever, or minuscule in size. You know, the movement is not as big as it was 20 or 30 right. years ago, and there's many reasons for that. But I think part of it is this trend, like you're saying, you know, away from a traditionalist approach that. It may have worked fine, but it doesn't seem to have the immediacy and the vibrancy that it once did.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I feel like I so often hear people in the movement say, "Meet people where they are," and
right.
to me, this is exactly that invitation. Like, culture and society is indicating a progressive movement towards the way it's doing life. I mean, you can look at companies like Uber and Lyft. I mean, you can resist that, but it's like that train has gone.
We're at the break, I think. What? Hold that thought, Lola. When we come back,
great.
We'll talk more about where New Thought is today. I'm with Lola Wright. Join me after these messages from Unity.
We are spiritual beings having a human experience. Welcome to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
It takes you to power Unity Online Radio. If you'd like to make a positive difference in the world, you can by contributing to this global ministry. Unity Online Radio relies on listeners like you to support our broadcasts that send our messages out to an awakening world. Go to unityonlineradio.org and click on Donate today.
Here's a Unity Mindful Moment with Eric Butterworth, taken from the live lecture, A Course in Practical Metaphysics.
Emily Cady, in her Lessons in Truth, makes a statement which I think we need to kind of think about a little bit. She says, God is not a being with qualities or attributes, but he is the good itself coming into expression as life, love, power, wisdom, etc. He is the good itself coming into expression as life, love, power, and wisdom. In other words, and this again is shattering to some of us, God is not loving. God is a loving God. God is not loving. Because the moment we talk about God as loving, we've got the anthropomorphic Michelangelo-like God sitting up in a crowd somewhere with his heart beaming out, saying, oh, I love you all down there so dearly, as long as you're good. But I'm not going to love you very much if you don't go to church and so forth. God is not loving. God is love.
To find out more about Eric Butterworth, visit unity.org.
Look who's making a difference in the world. It's the New Thought Walden Award honorees. Profiled in Unity Magazine, the September-October edition, Unity has joined with its New Thought partners to honor 27 leaders serving in the areas of spirituality, healing, interfaith understanding, caring for the earth, and social activism. These are people you need to know about. Pick up Unity Magazine or go online to waldenawards.com.
Give someone you love the gift of inspiration with a subscription to Unity Magazine. Each issue has interesting articles and compelling interviews from some of today's most prominent spiritual thought leaders. Explore new ideas in health, science, spirituality, and a lot more. Send gifts to your family and friends and save $7 off the subscription rate. Get a one-year subscription for just $14.95. This offer ends on December 31st, so go to unity.org to find out more.
Find the truth within yourself that heals, reveals, guides, and transforms. Tune in to Reverend Galen McDowell every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central for Truth Transforms. Take a deep dive into the practical aspects of New Thought teaching, starting with forgiveness, spiritual healing, prosperity, and more. Reverend McDowell welcomes some amazing guests, and topics can range from reincarnation to the Bible to science. Make plans to join the show here on UnityOnlineRadio.org.
Call now with your question or comment. 816-251-3555. That's 816-251-3555.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm Paul John Roach, and you can check me out at my website if you like, pauljohnroach.com. I've got a blog that's coming out this week. You can see it on my website or on my Facebook. I'll put that up for you. Today, I'm talking with Lola Wright. She's the spiritual leader of the Bodhi Center in Chicago. We're talking about New Thought and where it is today. And how to, I guess, deepen our own spirituality. It's part of a four-week series where I'll be interviewing leading lights in the New Thought movement. And we've been having a spirited discussion on various subjects around New Thought. I came across a great quote this week, Lola, from Pema Chodron, one of my favorite teachers from the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. And she said that we are the sky, the rest is just weather. And I like that, you know, because you're talking about infinite expansiveness, right? We are the sky. We are that spaciousness. And all the stuff that goes on for us, all the egoic things, all the divisiveness, is just weather systems coming and going. And there's always going to be weather, right? If we remember we're the sky, then we allow the weather to be what it is. Instead of personalizing it and said, my weather's better than your weather, or I like highs, I don't like lows, or whatever. It's, you know, it's part of the cycle of the seasons, the weather patterns. And so, for some reason, that struck me, that image. It was helpful.
Yeah, I do think that's powerful. Of course, the joker in me wants to say, well, that doesn't mean you don't take responsibility for climate change.
Yeah, there we go. Good one. Yeah, it's just the weather. I don't have to worry about it. Yes, you do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, you know, there's sort of another approach, isn't it, that we might have. You know, I'm spiritual now. You know, I don't need to do anything else. You know, I just need to stay in that vibrant zone of Om, and all will be well. But, you know, we are called to take it down from the mountaintop, of course, into the world of reality, right? And try and make a difference here to the best light. Yeah. I like what you said earlier, and that is, you know, even if you get angry, is it conscious anger, you know, or are you just blindly bumbling around, you know, making a fool of yourself and maybe doing a mischief to others? Or are we consciously taking charge? Because, you know, there's times when anger is important. You know, if you're defending somebody that's in imminent danger, and you feel the righteous anger rising up, it can help you, right? It can be useful.
That's right. That's absolutely. I mean, I cannot believe that. I mean, I think anger is oftentimes the mobilizing feeling state that causes change. So to me, I have a great comfort with anger. And I actually think, particularly in today's culture, I mean, adults have been robbed of safe and affirming spaces to allow anger. And that starts when kids are little. I mean, you know, we've all been sort of domesticated to suppress our anger. And I actually firmly believe that that's the source of much disease and, you know, upset in the physical body, is the unwillingness to feel your feelings all the way through, to move consciously that which is stirring in you, and to be responsible for it. You know, my practices with my husband, with my kids, with my community is, you know, what if we were to practice nonverbal sound and body movement to move the feelings that are coming through? You know, and that way I sort of, we take responsibility for having the anger or the feeling state be lobbed at someone by eliminating the use of words. And we just match, if I were to give my body permission to match the feeling state in nonverbal sound and physical movement, what would that look like? That is an incredibly liberating practice for adults, many of whom are never afforded place and space to feel their feelings all the way through to completion. And, you know, one of the things that I talk a lot about, again, you know, based on the work of the Conscious Leadership Group, is this idea that if we do not give place and space to feel our feelings, simultaneously realizing we are not our feelings, but if we do not give place and space to feel our feelings, they calcify into a mood. And a mood is a whole other ball of wax. There's freedom in feeling your feelings. There's a lot of entrapment in a mood.
Right, because a mood leads into a story, and we get stuck in that story. You know, we begin to rationalize it and make it something that it doesn't need to be. You know, before we know where we are, we have a whole system that we built up that is not based in reality, right? It's based in our fantasizing reaction to things. You know, I think there's a lot of anger in America right now, you know, on many people's part, and some of it may be arising from, you know, one reason or another, but it's real. It's a real anger. Is it always coming out in a conscious way, you know, in a helpful way? Maybe not, but it's certainly real, and it has to be addressed. You know, it's not going to go away. You're not going to say that, no, stop being angry, because, you know, these folks are, for one reason or other, very angry. I think a lot of them are angry at the PC world, you know, politically correct world that seems to be out there. You know, I want to return to something else. I'm not sure they know what they want to return to, but I think this whole motivation to make America great again, you know, it's to get back to something that we feel we've lost. And, you know, that has to be addressed. It's not something you can say, well, that's silly. It's a true motivation, right?
Yes. And sadly, when you strip authentic and real history from the institution of education in America, and you start to manipulate the narrative of this country's history, you systematically create those divisions.
Yes, you know, that's a good point.
If we could have a sober reconciling of the history of the United States of America that documents all people of this country, not some people of this country, it would be a very different conversation. I mean, the fact of the matter is that, you know, at the time of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King's death, he was at the point of launching the Poor People's Campaign, which the Reverend Dr. William Barber has since picked up. And the premise of that body of work is that there are interests shared among the vast majority of Americans that have been divided strategically into essentially a caste system based on race and class. But if you are not taught that, it is very easy to perpetuate the otherizing of people who share your interests when you don't realize you have shared interests. That's very, you know, like there's a great body of work that titled something like, I came across it recently, When the Irish Became White. You know, as someone who's Irish Catholic, And while I am a New Thought minister and lead a New Thought community, culturally I identify as Irish Catholic. There's a shared humor. There's a cultural context there. And if you are unfamiliar with the way the immigrant community got over time absorbed into a fictitious race that we now understand as whiteness, and you don't understand why that was implemented to essentially create a power structure, then yeah, you're going to feel like you're going to otherize all over the place. Does that make sense, Paul?
Absolutely. And you know, it's disturbing that we're not teaching the education system is doing a disservice. I mean, we're lagging behind the rest of the world too in certain subjects as well, not just history. You know, the lack of giving a thorough, I was going to say liberal education, but in the old-fashioned term of the word liberal, but that's not a good term to use because there you go again. You're forcing people to see a certain way. But you know, something that's for me was powerful. I went to the Civil Rights Museum in Atlanta not too long ago, and I was moved to tears in there. It's just an amazing place, and it's very hands-on. You know, and you sat at the lunch counter and put headphones on, heard all the insults and the rattling of canes and this against the benches and whatnot. And you know, after about 2 minutes, you know, you were done. You wanted to get out of there, and it was such a visceral experience of what happened. And then it showed all the SNCC people who'd come down from the north, you know, to campaign in the south, and they had been beaten to death or whatever. And their faces, and it's just, you know, I grew up in Britain, so it's not part of my culture, but it's definitely part of the inequality that I knew as a child as well, because we have a class system in Britain, and it was a huge experience for me to go there, you know, and I was encouraged, actually. There were a lot of youth groups in there, a lot of school children were going around that place, and I thought, this is important, you know, we have to teach our children. We cannot forget that these things happened, right? It's so important that we understand that history because that's not happening today. I don't think, you know, we're brushing, we're lifting up something else, you know, which is less honorable.
Yeah, one of my most useful reminders is you cannot shift what you cannot accept. And so long as we are living in resistance to the documented history of this country, we are not free to create something new. And there is oftentimes a resistance to looking at the what so of the history of this country. And so long as we are unwilling to do that, we are trapped. And, you know, I have a body of work called Normal White People, and it is a consciousness and a conversation that's cultivating community around the exploration of one's racial consciousness. And oftentimes, you know, I think it can be tempting in the New Thought movement to say, you know, why don't we move beyond this? Or, you know, why do we always have to, you know, talk about that? Or, you know, you're by virtue of you talking about it, you're creating greater division. And it's like, well, wait a second. You know, I identify as a white cisgender woman, and to invalidate my experience on the planet as a woman doesn't really work. Like, there are unique experiences that I have as a woman on the planet, and they are different from what I assume are the unique experiences of a man on the planet. Such would be true for those who identify as Black, Latino, Asian, Indigenous, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, this resistance to being present to one's experience only deepens the divide. It does not transform anything.
So in a way, what I'm hearing is that sometimes new thought can be a sort of an escapism, right? That we're into this place where all is well, you know, I can hold the right thoughts and I achieve prosperity or good results. And all that's nice, maybe. I know I was attracted to it when I first came into Unity and New Thought back in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, because it spoke to this idea that all things are possible. But, you know, I've never resonated that much with the idea of divine mind and new thought, because it seems too mental, you know. And of course, it had some of its origins in mental science, mental movement, mental healing. But there's got to be more than just the mind here, you know, in that sense, right? The cognitive mind. There's a mystery that is, you know, talks to the intuitive parts of ourselves, the visceral parts of ourselves, as much as the cognitive parts of ourselves.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, I mean, like Ernest Holmes said, turn entirely away from the condition, but he also didn't say pretend like you don't have cancer. I mean,
right.
Like there's something that's been lost in translation for some people around these topics, I think. And for me, the most skilled metaphysicians have the spiritual maturity within themselves to look at a thing, call out a thing, be honest and sober around the consciousness that created the thing, all while holding the spiritual ideal, the spiritual truth. The principle, you know, one, like we've got to evolve beyond our own dualistic constraints within the new thought movement. You know, like we are, you know, build the mental muscle. It won't hurt to be able to look at racism in America, sexism in America, homophobia in America, capitalism in America, you know, elitism in America, whatever. And still know that it's not the truth. And it is where we are.
Right. Like, yes.
That to me is the most powerful. That, I think, is the thing that I feel like the most energy around is, like, I know the power of these teachings. I have moved mountains in my world with the application of these teachings. I want them for as many people as have an interest in shifting the circumstances and conditions of their life. And we have to take responsibility for the feedback that we're getting from the world that suggests the way we are teaching or communicating them is not effective. And there's something for us to look at there and be responsible for.
I came across a wonderful quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson the other day. I'd like to read it because it speaks to what we're saying. It says, metaphysics is dangerous as a single pursuit. We should feel more confidence in the same results from the mouth of a man of the world. The inward analysis must be corrected by rough experience. Metaphysics must be perpetually reinforced by life, must be the observations of a working man, must be biography. And I thought, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's
very powerful.
Phenomenal.
And it's speaking of what we're talking about, right? It can't be a thing in and of itself, because it's just a nice idea then. You know, it has to be brought down into the real world of real working people. And we're in the real world, right? That's what we're talking about. How do we live our lives effectively, you know, amidst all these quote problems that we have, you know, in our society, not to deny them, not to say, oh well, there's a greater world, and maybe, you know, if Pema Chodron is misunderstood, it's like an escapism, or well, I'm the sky, I don't have to worry about the weather. Of course we do.
That's right.
But it's good to know that there's that inner resource, right, that miracle working power of the spaciousness of the sky, of the divine, that is always present regardless of the turmoil, you know, that's going on.
Absolutely. I would love for you to send that to me. That is a brilliant, brilliant quote. I'm going to use that this Sunday.
Yeah. The Waldo Emerson one?
Yeah,
that's
Emerson quote, that is it. And,
yeah.
You know, it's that old adage that I grew up with in my family. Don't be so spiritually bound. You are of no earthly good.
Right. There we go. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's like, come on now. The big idea of this movement was to shift circumstances and conditions. And, you know, if you want to be a monk, go move to a monastery. But this world at this time and space is, you know, ready and eager for powerful spiritual principles. I mean, to me, the most exciting thing about what's occurring on the planet right now is that humanity has dialed up from the cosmic waitress, if you will, the desire to untangle the outsourcing of power, approval, security, and control, to really perhaps dismantle the notion that one figure, one political party, is going to determine the fate of a society. Like, that is, I mean, the populace is mobilized, and that is exciting. And, you know, it was fascinating watching the Kavanaugh hearings. I don't know, I could go down a rabbit hole here, but it's like, if they didn't delay, and if they hadn't created the opportunity for the FBI investigation to occur, watch the eruption of women in this country. That would have been something, and it's still in the works, you know?
Right. Oh, yeah. It's very much still quite a possibility, you know? We'll see what happens at the end of this week, right?
Right. More to be revealed.
Go ahead, sorry.
No, I just said more to be revealed. That's one of my mantras.
Yeah, more to be revealed. you know, and there's some folks I know are listening to this show saying, yeah, it's about time we voted him in and so he could get on the Supreme Court and we'll be done with all this nonsense. So, you know, that's a differing point of view that, you know, is real for a lot of people and a lot of people that are my friends, you know.
Yeah.
And so we have to understand, like you said, you know, maybe the opposite of my story is more valid than my story. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like, wait a minute, am I living in an insane world? Am I the one that's insane? I don't know. It calls everything into question, but, you know, that's staying open, isn't it? And
I
like, you know, I think it was Don Cupid, you know, said, he was a British bishop back in the 60s and 70s. And he said, you know, we could disagree in theory and still be together in the practice. You know, we all want to love our children. We all want to eat a good meal. We all want to generally drive on the right side of the street. You know, there's some fundamentals here that we share that are more important than, you know, all the theories we may have about how society works. So if you can tap into that, I think if you can tap into that connectedness that we have with each other, and be a friend at that level, you know, that there's the hope for me.
That's right.
You know, just to be kind. This is, you know, Dalai Lama said, you know, my religion is kindness. If we can just be a little kind to each other here in the process of our disagreeing, then that's huge for me. I don't have to agree with you, but I don't have to be hateful to you either, you know?
That's right. That's right. That's absolutely right. Yep.
So we're almost out of time. Lola, I'm going to put you on the line now and ask you, share something totally valid and powerful that our listeners can put into practice this week. What would it be? What's charging you up right now that you want to share?
I mean, I think I'll go back to something I said earlier in the show, which is adults giving themselves permission to feel their feelings all the way through, to create a place, even if it's in the sacred space of your car, where you can give voice to your feelings that are moving through. I mean, many people are not even connected to what is stirring in their body. So the questions that I always like to ask is, what's the body sensation stirring in you now? Independent of a story, is it a swirling in your belly? Is it a tightening in your shoulders? Is it a clenching in your jaw? what's the body sensation? Next, what's the feeling state? Your only five choices are anger, sadness, joy, fear, or creativity. If you had to pick a cocktail of those five, anger, sadness, joy, fear, creativity, what's the feeling state? And then what's the next thought? Can we just give ourselves permission to be present in this now moment to that which is stirring in me right here, right now? That's my greatest practice. I would love for humanity to be in a devotional exploration of that which is occurring in your physical, emotional, mental state.
Right. Very powerful. And I'm a big proponent of that, too, because I think you can learn more by being honest about an emotion than trying to escape into, say, blanket happiness or whatever. You know, when I've really opened up to what's really going on, what real feelings I'm having, that's a greater sense of peace than anything else, you know. So to just to own up to stuff is profoundly transformative, I've found. So, which is good news, because it means that the joy, the good, the heartwarming depth of feeling is right in the midst of where we are right now, folks. We don't have to go somewhere else. The answer lies within what's happening, just right where
that's
we are. And that's pretty profound.
That's absolutely it.
Let me tell you about next week, and then we'll say goodbye to Lola. Next week, Mitch Horowitz is with me. He wrote the bestseller Occult America. He's also written a book about New Thought called One Simple Idea, and he's followed that up with another one called The Miracle Club. It's just hot off the press, and it's about how thoughts become reality. So, again, another fascinating study by Mitch, who's been on all the big outlets, quite a well-known name, so I'm excited to have him on the show next week. But it's been a total joy to have Lola Wright. If you're in Chicago, check out the Bodhi Center or go to the Bodhi Center website and you can connect with Lola and all of any things that she does. And if they want to do that, it's what's the connector?
Check us out at Bodhi, B-O-D-H-I, spiritualcenter.org or lolawright.com. And we're
super active on social media.
All
right. And thanks, folks, for listening. And we'll hopefully talk with you next week. Join us then. Take care now.
Thanks for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.